Michael persuaded me to come along and talk at this session. I said, what's it about? He said, business models. And I said, I don't know anything about business models. And he said, it's about culture. And I said, well, I don't like the term culture. I do things which relate to culture, but I don't call it culture. I call it logic, rationality, different terms. But when I told him about this particular case study, he said, oh, that's just what we want. But I was rather nervous about it, again, because the case study was actually done by one of my PhD students, Zubair Azhar, and I've not had direct contact with the organisation. So this is probably the first presentation I've ever made about a case study where I've not actually been in the organisation. So hence, I'm somewhat nervous, and you may ask questions, and I'll say, well, I'll have to send an email to Zubair, because unfortunately he's in Malaysia at the University of Penang, and it wasn't feasible to bring him over for this session. One of my colleagues, I think, is in the room. She's got the train this morning, Chun-Lei Yang, wherever she is. I'm not sure where she may not have made it yet. Can't see. Anyway, she was the other supervisor. Chun-Lei and I supervised Zubair's PhD. And he did a study of the organization I want to talk about. I provided stimulus in terms of the theoretical approach that he was using based on the work that I do. And so I'm going to present the case study, but it will reflect my thinking about how to understand responses to business models. Now, as I say, I don't know what that term really means. In this particular case, the organization has introduced a new way of working, which it calls high-performance culture. And that involves them introducing new ways of thinking commercially. And so we may define that as a business model. Although within the organization, they have a number of things which they call business models. They have a retail model, and they have an airport model. It's an airport company, as you'll see in a moment. And so I'm not sure what business models are, so I'll just use the term very loosely and leave it till later in the day to see if I can understand more from other speakers what business models actually are. So that's the starting point. And so let me move on to the organisation, because mostly I'm just going to present the information about the organisation and then draw some lessons from that. It's a company which we call Airport Co. It's located in Southeast Asia. We do have permission to use the company's names in publications for academic purposes. I didn't feel particularly comfortable in using the name in a presentation, a more open presentation like this, and so I've anonymized it and just called it Airport Co. You can probably work out where it is. But although Zubair is now in Penang, which is in Malaysia, he wasn't at that university when he did the work, so it's not necessarily Malaysia. I'll leave it at that. And the company is partly owned by the government. It's known as a state-linked organization. And all these organizations, these state-linked organizations, have been under pressure to improve their business performance. Airport Co. is one that actually is quite well-performing and earns quite high profits. But it's still under pressure from the government. Well, you can earn more. You're doing well. You can earn even more. We want more commercial returns on these companies. So there's this general pressure to improve business performance. And so the idea is that all these state-linked organizations introduce this idea of a high-performance culture. That's a term that they give to a series of initiatives which enable them to improve their business performance, which is usually interpreted in terms of profitability. But that's the interesting thing about this particular case. It gets reinterpreted in different parts of the organization. And that's what I particularly want to look at and then draw some lessons from the way in which it gets reinterpreted and how accounting contributes to that process And I think there are lessons for accountants, particularly from this. There was a considerable amount of business re-engineering within Airport Co. And what we're going to look at is a range of responses within the organisation. Now, just to do a little bit of the theory, I'm not going to go into any great details in the type of theory I use. I know some of my academic colleagues will want to debate the way I look at these issues, but I'm not going to get too involved in that, hopefully, but want to focus on the more practical lessons. As I said before, I don't like the word culture. In academic terms, it opens up too many types of problems and debates. And so I like to think more in terms of the word logics. But we could also just use a general term, mindsets. Different people have different mindsets. They look at problems in different ways. They have a different logic. And you know, we can think about accountants having a different sort of logic, a different way of looking at problems, say, to engineers. And a number of cases I've done over the years has looked at differences and problems that accountants get into from time to time when they introduce new systems, and the engineers look at the new systems in different ways. And what I'm particularly interested in my academic research is the different types of logics which different groups have. But the issue here is that we don't think of a group and say, here's the accountants, what's their logic? It's more the other way around. A group of people share particular ways of thinking, and that's what defines the groups that I'm interested in. And it may be accountants versus engineers, but it could be some accountants with some engineers have a particular way of thinking, which is different to another group of accountants and engineers. And so it's those differences which I find interesting academically. And I refer to those as situated logics. They're based in the situation in which the groups find themselves. We all have different logics, different ways of thinking. As an academic, I think in particular ways, and my wife criticizes me, thinking, you're always thinking that way, or you think like an accountant. But those of us this sort of training, we think in that particular way. But there will be other things that overlay that. Those of us with religious convictions will think about certain problems at certain times from that way of thinking. And there may be political ways of thinking which we bring. So in any given situation, some of those ways of thinking will apply. And it will be groups of people who share that will be the groups that I'm particularly interested in. And that will come about, the ways of thinking, due to wider logic, such as the logic that we as accountants are trained with and stick with us. I was trained as an accountant 50 years ago, and I worked as a practicing accountant only for 6 years. But people still say, I think like an accountant. And that's something you get trained into, and it's very difficult to move away from. And so there are those wider logics, but there will also be some very local or shared interests and experiences which give rise to ways of thinking inside a particular organisation. And it's that mixture of the wider ways of thinking and the specifics of a given situation which lead to what I'm thinking about, and what I call situated logics. And that's how we're going to look at this particular case of Airport Co. And just to do a diagram, because an academic is not complete without doing a diagram linking the ideas together. But there are some underlying values and norms which are shared at some level in the organisation with a particular groups. This gives rise to the situated logics. And those logics then will determine the way in which we approach problems. In some of the literature, the way in which the logics or norms and values give rise to particular decisions is rather vague. It's left as though it's just an automatic response. But what I'm particularly interested in is that the types of logics give rise to ways of thinking, to deliberation. When we're in a given situation, we think like an accountant, but we deliberate like an accountant, so we decide what to do. We choose a particular routine. We follow a particular form of practice. And so the situated logics will shape the rules and routines and lead to specific actions, and together they lead to what we see in organisations as the practices that are followed inside the organisation. And so what I'm trying to do in these terms is to look at the practices that we see within Airport Co. That's the end of the academic bit, the theory bit. Let's look at what actually happened. In this particular company, this Airport Co., we're looking at three specific subsidiaries. One, which deals with what I've termed local airports, which deals with domestic and the smaller international airports. And there is one major international airport located in the capital city, which is a hub and a big airport. And so that's a separate division. And so we've got the major international airport in one division. We've then got all the other airports which form the local airports division. And in addition, there's a separate division which is called retail, I've called retail, which looks after all the retail activities, the sort of things we see in airports when you're trying to get through to the departure gate and you've got to walk different angles through all these shops and various things. And so they deal with all the retail, both at the major international airport and at the other airports as well. So it's the retail of the types of products that we see at the airport, but also the food and beverage facilities at the airports as well. And what is particularly interesting in this case is the different responses that we see in these business units to the high performance culture, the initiative to, or the business model of a high performance culture. And in the process of developing this high performance culture, there is accounting change, where accounting also has to demonstrate that it's contributing to the high performance culture. And so there was re-engineering also within the accounting function to have a more high-performing accounting function. And we see certain types of resistance to the accounting change. Tensions emerge, can be problematic. Some of them may be temporary and will be worked out in subsequent periods. But it's those responses we want to look to. And I'm particularly interested in what's happening with the accounting. But before we can get into the accounting, we need to look at more detail about the individual business units. And I need to give you a little bit of history in order to understand the situation, the experiences in the organisation. So the Airport Co. grew out of a government department, the Department of Civil Aviation. This was a department which was responsible both for regulating air traffic and airports and also for managing the airports. But in the last 30, 40 years, airport passengers have grown, particularly in Southeast Asia, and it became necessary and appropriate to divide the two responsibilities. And so in the early 90s, the regulatory roles and the operational roles were split, such that they ended up with a DCA, a continuing Department of Civil Aviation, which is the regulator, and Airport Co., which is the operation management of all the airports in the country. Airport Co. is a public listed company, but the government still is the major shareholder and is able to dictate is probably the wrong word, but some people in the organisation would say that the government is dictating policy. Technically, it doesn't dictate policy. It encourages in policies that are in the national interest, the economic interest of the country as a whole. There's tension there about how much pressure the government put on. But what they are, what I should say is that when it was initially set up, as Airport Co., it had decentralised operations and functions with multiple systems, which I'll come to that in a moment. But at the present time, over the last 10 years or so, it's experienced considerable pressure for a high-performance culture. This is a government initiative and a government-backed program for all these state-linked companies to improve their performance. Now, Airport Co. is not a loss-making, it's actually a well-performing company. Some of the other state-linked companies are much more poorly performing, but they're still under this pressure to improve their performance. So they've gone through a process of rationalisation and functional centralisation. They've moved from a very decentralised form of organisation to a much more centralised form of organisation. And so they've developed a number of ways of generating this high-performance culture, setting high targets and increasingly high targets going through time, and then through two phases particularly of re-engineering. First of all, restructuring the core processes, and the second phase of restructuring the support functions, including accounting. Human resource and accounting of being centralised and restructured, and I'll come back to that in a moment. And there's many initiatives, the sort of things that we would expect of a modern business, and the types of things that management textbooks would say companies should be doing in order to improve their performance. What we did in this organisation is we talked to lots of people and tried to look at the way in which they understood what they were doing, the sort of logics that they applied. And this is a summary of how we saw the different logics that appeared in the company. And there are three logics that I want to talk about. And the three different ways of looking at problems. And they're not necessarily one group of people has this way of doing this, another group of people has another way of doing it. There's some overlap in these, and as we'll see in a moment, overlap within the different business units. So there is a logic of public service, and this comes from the public service tradition of the DCA. It was a Department of Civil Aviation, a government department with government budget and all the bureaucracy which goes with that. And it inherited quite a lot of staff from the previous DCA. When the DCA was split into a regulatory and an operating role, the operating personnel moved into the new company, Airport Co. So it's in the systems and it's in the people that have been inherited from the DCA. In addition, some parts of the organisation continue to have social obligations. Some of the airports, and I'll mention this again later, but some of the airports are crucial to the locality. They're the only way of getting people in and out of that part of the country. Rural airports, people cut off from the rest of the country without this. You know, you can hack through the jungle or the types of terrain to get out, but the only feasible way to get out on a regular basis is through the airports. And so it's a civil obligation to provide this type of airport. There's also a logic of technical efficiency. Airports are highly regulated. They have to be efficient. By efficient, I mean the whole range of things that go with managing an airport. Being safe, being able to ensure that you're checking all the passengers for, you know, explosives and all those sort of things that are part of modern day airport security, as well as being able to ensure that people get their bags when you're waiting at the end of the line at the baggage claim, that your bag turns up reasonably quickly and all those sort of things, and then getting the aircraft turned round and out on the air as quickly as possible. All those sort of things relate to the technical efficiency of the operations. And then the third level, or the third type, is a logic of commercialization. We have to be profitable. It's a public limited company quoted on the stock exchange. We have to be profitable. and we have to apply business-like practices. So those three logics appear in the different parts of the organisation, and we'll explain what we see in the responses to the high-performance culture, this new business model. So looking at these three business units which I mentioned, the first one is the local airports. As I mentioned, they have domestic airports and a few smaller international airports. The domestic airports include sort of ones for commuting between cities, but also these fair number of rural airports, which are the only form of communication for the people living there. Overall, they have almost half of the passenger movements for the airport company. Again, they've not had a particular problem with their profitability, but they do feel very exposed because there's rising operating costs, increasing costs of security, and expectations about delivery of bags and all the other facilities that have to be applied, and bigger aircraft that have to be accommodated, and all those sort of things are increasing their operating costs. But on the other hand, the income, the revenues, are highly regulated. The government set the charges that they can apply, and there are pressures from the airlines about the amount of charges that can go through and the charges that can occur at these rural airports. It's a public service, people can't do it any other way. You can't charge a high cost to the people who need to use these facilities. So here we see a strong public service commitment. We see the logic of public service drawn in by the residue from the Department of Civil Aviation, and we also see the current social obligations shaping the logic of public service, and also the logic of... Have I gone the wrong way here? No, I haven't. The logic of technical efficiency, because they have to apply all the standards. Even the small airports have to have the same levels of technical efficiency and standards that apply to more the larger airports. So here we see a situation in which the public service and technical efficiency reinforce each other. And as a result, there's very little evidence of commercialization in these airports. Commercial performance is tended to be said, well, if we start focusing on reducing costs, earning more profits, we won't be able to provide the technical efficiency that's needed for our operations. So in this particular case, there's a quite severe tension between the demand for commercial activities and the technical efficiency and public service commitment. And so when we see the application of the high-performance culture, they do various initiatives which are designed primarily to improve technical efficiency and to provide better public service, but they're much more reluctant to apply initiatives which will improve commercial performance, although some of the international airports are prepared and able to do that. But there are very few commercial developments at the domestic airports. So what we're seeing here is the new business model being shaped by the ways of thinking in the organisation, by the logic of public service and the logic of technical efficiency. So the business model becomes located according to the particular logics in this part of the organisation, which is just what I've said on that final point on the slide. If we move to the international airport, the major international airport, this was developed in the 1990s, and the business unit was set up to manage this new international airport. So quite a number of the senior staff actually moved from the local airport business unit because they'd been operating an international airport that was actually replaced by this new major international airport. So there are staff moving from local airports, and many of those staff also had a history from the DCA. The revenues in this business unit come from both aeronautical activities and non-aeronautical activities. The non-aeronautical activities include leases, leasing space within the airport confines, rentals to different people, operating a VIP lounge, things of that nature, but not retail. Retail is a separate division. They're having increasing passenger numbers, again, sort of in line with international trends, and this is giving rise to increased revenues. So again, they're increasing profitability, increasing revenues, but they're still under pressure to generate even more. And their high-performance culture gets reflected in improving technical efficiency and also commercialization. An interesting quote, which I haven't put on here, but one of the senior managers made the comment, if there's no efficiency, we don't make any money. People won't come to our airport, we won't be able to generate any revenues, and if there's no money, we won't be able to invest in efficiency. So these two fit together. They work together. They need to have both a logic of technical efficiency and a logic of commercialization. There's not much evidence of the logic of public service, although, as I mentioned, there is some residue of people from the DCA, but there's also quite a lot of new employees. And there's no feeling of a public service commitment in operating the major international airport. Although some of the people that were interviewed did talk about they're operating this airport on behalf of the government. So they have to have a license from the government to operate. So they do see it as something that they're doing as a public service, but not in the same way as the local airports, particularly those rural airports, where it's the only form of communication for the people. Here, they're operating the international airport with authority from the government, but it's not viewed as a public service commitment. It's much more a commercial operation to maintain their license. And to maintain their license, they have to be technically efficient as well. So we get people talking about technical efficiency is a big thing. But on the other hand, we have to balance efficiency and commercialization. And as I mentioned before, efficiency and commercialization reinforce each other. And again, as I alluded to earlier, various initiatives are sort of management textbook type things, lean management, Six Sigma, cost efficiency models are all being applied in the operations to improve operations and to achieve the financial targets. Nevertheless, there can be some resistance to that. Some people feeling, well, we're making money, why have we got to make more money? When is enough enough? Some of the operation managers feeling they're being efficient. Why should we efficient technically? Why should we be trying to get even more profits when we're running a very efficient, technically very efficient airport and making money? The pressure was to get even more money, and that may damage our focus on efficiency. But that's a relatively small group of people. Most of the people are relatively happy with the idea of the high-performance culture in terms of both technical efficiency and commercialization. The third unit, is the retail unit, which manages all the retail activities, including catering at some of the domestic airports, but at all the international airports, not just the major international one, the international airports that are operated by the local airport division. And it is very profitable. There's lots of money to be made through sales at airports. And head office is aware of this, and it's setting very high targets, which they believe are unrealistic. And so they just ignore them, basically, and set their own challenging targets, but they ignore the ones from head office. But they have quite challenging targets themselves to improve their profitability, and they've implemented what they call an airport retail business model, or business models. So this is a model of business models at another level, where they're talking about how they manage their operations. There are some staff in here that were ex-DCA, but very few, and no public service commitment. So there's no real logic of public service in the retail division. The logic of technical efficiency is not really an issue for them, although they are interested in retail efficiency. But they do recognise the importance of a technically efficient airport, because unless the operations are efficient, the people are not going to be there to buy their products. So they allow the others to, and expect the other people in the international business units, and also in the local business unit, to be technically efficient, to bring in the passengers so that they can achieve what's most important to them, and that's the profitability through the logic of commercialism. And the quotes we got from people in there, this is the most commercially oriented subsidiary, and it focuses particularly on improving profitability through a range of models, what they call airport retail models, passenger profiling, recognising differences between younger passengers and more senior passengers, having different needs, and how do they accommodate those, maximising passenger tread. These are what I found very irritating, that they're taking you all over the place. When you want to go from A to B, you have to go. But that's part of the business model, expanding the customer target groups, not just selling to the people going out, selling to the people coming back, selling to people who are seeing people off or collecting people. So widening the potential customers and diversifying to all sorts of types of sales and sales in different ways through different media. So the high-performance culture in here is very clearly defined in terms of profitability, as we would expect of a retail type of organisation. And they've done various initiatives to achieve that. So what we see, it's taken a bit of time to do that, but in here we see three different units with different ways of thinking, different types of logics. The local airports have public service plus technical efficiency. The major international airport, technical efficiency plus commercialism, and retail, highly focused on commercialism, with a recognition that the other other business units have to achieve technical efficiency in order for them to operate commercially. Right. Just to start you thinking a little bit, the accountants are going to make some changes to the accounting functions to introduce a high-performing accounting function. Where do you think they're likely to have most problems? Which divisions are likely to be the divisions which give rise to problems in doing this? I'm not going to ask for votes or comments, but just think about where you might anticipate problems if you were the accountants responsible for the accounting function and creating a high-performing accounting function. You've got to work with these three different business units with different types of logics in them. Where do you expect the problems to be? Just think about it, and then I'll come on and tell you what they did, and that may change where you think the problems may be, but we'll see what happens. So let me move on and say what sort of changes took place in the accounting. The accounting function for Airport Co. was what was inherited from the DCA. When it was set up, it inherited accounting systems from the DCA. And the local airports division was probably the major division in the early days. That was the main operating division. And it had the systems, the bureaucratic systems, from the DCA. But they needed to develop those systems. but they were developed at the business unit level, and then they came off a separate retail division, which developed their own systems, and then there was also the major international airport division, which developed their own systems. And so you had a range of systems at the different business units. And when the new CFO was appointed in the early 2000s, the comments were, our practices are too problematic. There are many different systems in the business units and incompatible systems. And they managed them within the business units, but it provided rather poor information to head office. And another perceived problem was that the accounting staff within the business units were really the odd job guys. Any job that needed to be done, they'd ask the accountant to do it. So they were there to help people, but they weren't always doing accounting. Often they weren't doing accounting-related tasks, or they weren't focusing on accounting-related tasks. They were doing whatever was needed and different things in different business units. So it was all very dispersed. And so what they wanted to do was to re-engineer the accounting function. Initially, to restructure and to centralise the accounting function so that people were doing similar things with standard systems. And this led them, in the second phase of the re-engineering the accounting function, to the introduction of an ERP system that was common across the organisation. So in terms of logic, just to think about the way in which the accounting was thought about under the older system, we could think about a logic of, if you want to call it that, localism. It was very locally based, with decentralized accounting functions, autonomous practices at the subsidiary level, multiple and independent systems, and a considerable amount of direct on-site involvement in activities, but not always accounting activities, sometimes activities which got in the way of doing accounting. The new way of thinking, which was brought in by the CFO to bring about a high-performance culture, was one in which the accounting function was going to be much more professional. They wanted to centralise the accounting functions and then to be able to work on economies of scale, people doing similar things across the organisation. But to do that, they needed standardised practices and integrated systems. And they also wanted to do considerable training for the accounting staff. A lot of the accounting staff had been brought in over the years, generally people straight from university with no professional accounting training, and so they developed a considerable program for training accounting people through CEMA, getting the CEMA qualification. It was a major program for them. But this brought with it rather less on-site involvement. Oh yeah, I'm just trying to say, there's one point I just need to pause again, but not yet. So what they did, they had the idea of improving performance by reducing the cost to serve, the cost to provide the accounting function. So economies of scale, standardized practices, a better balance of work, focusing on the accounting problems, and the professional knowledge and training. And they restructured the roles of the accounting function, and this is one of the diagrams that they use. And these are the sort of things I think most of us would be familiar with the basic support at the local level, which is to do with managing cash, collecting monies from suppliers, paying suppliers, collecting money from customers and the like, shared services for processing various activities, business partnering. So they wanted to have a group of people who were able to provide, to be business partners to the individual business units. Although these people were still located head office, their responsibilities were for the individual business units, and then centres of excellence for specific activity like procurement, finance. So I think most of us would be familiar with that sort of structure. So let's go back to the question I asked. Where do you think the tensions and problems will occur? As the way they've gone about it, which seems to be in line with probably our way of thinking about how to organise an accounting function, does that change the way in which you think about where the problems will be in relation to the different business units? Just time to think. Well, if we look at the accounting staff, there were problems with the accounting staff because they were repositioned centrally. That made a significant move for people, and it moved them out of their comfort zones. They were used to doing things in particular ways. They now had to be more professional. That was challenging. The automation, you know, the systems were now much more automatic or computerized, ERPs and so on, much more complex. But that wasn't unexpected. I think people expected that would be a problem. They have to be coped with, people have to be encouraged and trained and so on. So that was, I think, something that we would probably anticipate and would have to be managed as we progress with any type of change. If we look at the operating staff, the problems occurred primarily in the retail division, not the other divisions. Now, I don't know what you thought where the problems would occur. We thought they're more likely to be where the logics were different, where people thought differently. Actually, the problems occurred where they thought in the same way. And we got comments like from retail managers, I thought they would support us better, but we end up doing things on our own because of this centralization. And this could be something that could be worked through, but the issue here is that the commercial division needs the support, the commercial support of the accounting systems, and they didn't feel they were getting exactly what they wanted, so that created the problems. Whereas in the other divisions, the other operating divisions, there was little resistance. This one's the major international airport. There's change everywhere. We've got this high-performance culture. Things have to change. We just try to be positive about this change. So that they're happy for it to take place, partly because it's taking place over there in the accounting function, not in the technical systems. And that's even more obvious when it comes to the local airports division. We don't mind it as long as they continue to do their job and we concentrate on our job. And so what we see is happening is that where there are quite different logics, people can separate themselves from the accounting systems and let the accountants get on with the work. Where the logics are much closer, there's more interaction between them. So rather than worrying about the people with very different types of logics, the problem in this particular case occurred where the logics were similar. Now, for us, that was not what we expected. I don't know whether it was what you expected, but it's something that's worth thinking about, where the problems are likely to occur. And this is why I think this is a nice case, because the response it was sort of counterintuitive. If I just raise some questions, the new business model, this high-performance culture, was promoted at the top of the organisation. Actually, it was promoted even higher. It was promoted by the government, came to the organisation, and they put it into practice in their organisation to achieve this high-performance culture. But as it moved down the organisation, it became reinterpreted at the different levels, according to the different ways of thinking, the mindset, culture, whatever you want to call it, at the different parts of the organisation. Is that a problem? I don't know the answer to that myself. It's worth thinking about. Is it a problem? Because what we're saying, maybe it isn't a problem. Maybe we should expect a good business model set at head office to have sufficient flexibility to be able to be put into practice at the local levels. And if I may use an analogy, I'm not thinking, I'll talk about global and local, but I'm not talking about global in terms of international, but just sort of something that spreads across the organisation. And it may be that for something to be global, to apply everywhere, it has to have the capability of being able to be localised. And if we move to an international context, the analogy I particularly like on this is the foods that have become international. You know, Mexican food is an international product. You can get it in London, you can get it in Mexico City, you can get it in many countries around the world. It's not the same Mexican food. If you have Mexican food in Mexico City, it probably doesn't suit the taste of somebody coming from London. It has to be adapted. We have to make changes, we have to localise to local tastes, to local culture, local ways of thinking. And so a good business model is one that can be adapted and can be made to work. But it shouldn't be in a chaotic way, it should be done in a meaningful way. But I don't think this is a problem so long as it's done in an organised way. And in fact, it's a necessary part of bringing the business model to the different parts of the organisation. So we have to think about how we go about that. The interesting thing, that, as I said, that we found on this was that the differences or the conflicts arise more where they're closer together rather than further apart. And maybe we need to think particularly carefully in applying the accounting. Does the accounting work with the different parts of the organisation? Because what I feel is that there's a tendency at times to say, here's the new business model, how do we apply that in the business? And we set up systems, control systems, KPIs, and various ways of measuring from an accounting perspective, and then impose those on the different divisions, rather than thinking, how can our accounting help the divisions to do what they want to do? So it's more, rather than finding an accounting solution and imposing that, is using accounting knowledge to facilitate the developments in the different business units so that the ways in which they think about their problems can be shaped in order to apply the new business model. And it reflects a general philosophy of accounting being used to orchestrate activities, to help people come to terms and understand their problems rather than accountants providing solutions to the problems. And that's something that I think is particularly important, but I don't want to spend more time on that now, because I think I've been going for about 45 minutes, which is what you intended. So, no, I'll stop at that.